Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Theater legend Betty Buckley once was dubbed the voice of Broadway, and next week she'll be taking that voice uptown about 30 blocks to the Upper East Side for a string of shows at Cafe Carlyle. After getting her break as Martha Jefferson in the musical 1776, Buckley starred in Broadway productions of Pippin, Sunset Boulevard, Triumph of Love, and it was the original production of Cats that won her a Tony. She's had this long and varied screen career as well, appearing alongside recently James McAvoy in the movie Split, also on TV Supergirl and Pretty Little Liars, and I must say, I thought she was the coolest mom on Eight is Enough. Okay, but there's more. She wrapped up a national tour of Hello, Dolly! In the lead role, and now she's bringing her many talents to Cafe Carlyle March 10th through the 21st. She'll be performing Broadway classics along with some newer pieces. It is so nice to have you in studio, Betty.
Nice to meet you, Allison. Thanks for having me.
So I want to ask about wrapping up this tour of Hello, Dolly! In August. For you, what was the highlight of that experience? I mean, you've been in this business a long time, but every time you do something, you take something away from it.
Oh, thanks. It's the best. Well, it's a beautiful production. It's exquisite. When I saw it on Broadway with Bette Midler, I wept from about the first third of the show to the end. My brother thought I was lost. It. I was like, this may be one of the greatest pieces of musical theater I've ever seen. And I basically had never targeted or thought about that role for myself. So shortly, in January of 2018, my agent called and said, they want you to take the national tour out. And I was literally shocked because I didn't picture myself as Dolly Levi. And so they started negotiating and then flew me to New York to meet with Scott Rudin and Jerry Zaks. And I said, you guys think I can do this? And they're like, yes. And I was like, okay, if you believe it, then I do. So it was a beautiful experience to get to work with this comedy genius, Jerry Zaks. Mm-hmm. I was 70 when I started working with him. I'm now 72. And it was like learning a whole new set of skills that I never expected to learn, this level of precise farcical comedy. And then I worked with Lewis Stadlin, who's a brilliant actor and a brilliant comedic actor. So I learned so much working with those guys and the production itself. But the greatest thing was taking this beautiful show that's all about joy and living a life of commitment to joy and pure love for everyone you meet across America. You know, and I thought, well, I wonder how some of these cities that have some notorious reputations in our fraught political mm-hmm. time period, how they're going to feel about this, you know? And I was expecting some cynicism or whatever. I don't know what I was expecting. But everywhere we went, people were weeping and standing and applauding at the end of the show for the whole production and were so grateful just to experience this sumptuous production of such beautiful costumes, color, sound, music, and happiness, such joy. And they were just so grateful every single night of 13 months on the road. And I was just gratified to know that we as a country and as a culture have that essential, you know, heartfelt need for happiness and joy and connection and love. That relieved me hugely, and I was really happy to be the quarterback of a team that could take that to people. It was very, very a great blessing in my life.
I really believe the arts and cultures are needed more now than ever.
More than ever.
People really need a place to be able to express themselves or to even just escape.
Yeah, and to feel that little child inside that just woke up every day excited about life, you know? And the theater is the place to feel that, you know, or music or concerts or dance or whatever. Anyway, I was just really grateful to be a part of it. And I learned something playing Dolly Levi, because I myself am a kind of couch potato, melancholy. I like bittersweet mm-hmm. stuff, you know? I read novels that are suspense thrillers, you know, and dark, you know? I like dark. And so the commitment to playing a character who is literally committed to joy was a huge challenge, but it left me with this feeling of, oh, joy is a choice. It's not something you wait to happen to you. It's something you get up every day and said, no matter what you feel, I'm going to be an instrument of joy today. I'm going to be for myself and for everybody I meet. And I I keep, because of the influence of her and that show and everything I learned and feeling that need mm-hmm. in our community so clearly, I want to do that. And it's not always easy. You know, I'm teaching a class right now, my 5-day workshop at the Terry Schreiber School here in New York. It's a song interpretation mm-hmm. acting class. And it's the biggest thing I can give people, you know, is the remembrance of that, because it's such a relief to remember your own fragile humanity in connection with all other human beings. You know, there's that we're all the same.
My guest is Betty Buckley. So you've played at the Carlisle before, and we've had a lot of the different artists who play at the Carlisle come in. And I always ask this question, what is it about that space that you like? What's unique about it?
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful room, and there's such a rich history there. I've had so many great experiences watching other artists there. The first time I was invited to sing there, it was years and years ago, and Eartha Kitt got sick. And so the manager of the room called me and asked me to sub for her that night. And it was just happened to be the weekend that there was this massive snowstorm in New York, and it, you know, it was no traffic. Nobody could even move. You know, the place was just shut down with the snow. And so hardly anyone was there. So I got to really practice, you know, without a lot at stake. And then I did a series of runs there for like 5 weeks, 6 weeks. And it's a beautiful hotel, but the room itself is just exquisite. It's very European in feeling. It's very intimate, and it's a beautiful music space. You know, I've seen Elaine Stritch there. I saw Judy Collins there. Some great, great artists, and I've had some memorable nights there. In fact, my collaborator, Christian Jacob, who's my pianist and musical director and seven-time Grammy nominee, I'm really fortunate to get to work with him. I've worked with him for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. We just finished a song yesterday that's called Elaine Stritch is My Guardian Angel, and it's about the experiences I used to have at the Carlisle, like when I was a young artist and trying to learn how to do this cabaret thing. She would literally come down to the bar and, you know, watch my show or shows on any number of occasions, and talk to me during my show and critique me and tell me what I was doing wrong. And I mean, I loved her. I loved her so much. So I wrote a little song about that. And I'm just so delighted that I finished it in time. I hopefully I can learn it in time for Tuesday, our opening. But yeah, it's a rich history for me, that room, and I'm really delighted to be back.
It's interesting. You said that cabaret thing. What's that cabaret thing, and how does that differentiate from the other things?
Well, see, you know, I started, obviously, in New York in theater, and then I really aspired to be a concert artist after I saw Sarah Vaughan in concert at Philharmonic, and she came out with her long-term trio, like they'd worked with her forever, and she sang Everything Must Change, I remember, and I had standing room only tickets. I was really young, and she just... when she finished singing this beautiful song in this really stunning arrangement, the audience was in this state of breathless suspension, and then everybody went nuts. And I thought, I want to learn what this is. I want to learn to be a concert artist, you know, and make people feel like that. So that was an aspiration. And then people started asking me to do these smaller rooms, which I didn't. And first I'm like, cabaret, you know, it's like it's a European, it's like a nightclub. It's like, you know, I had this notion of cabaret. But in that time period, people had definition systems of what they thought it should be. And there were certain cabaret artists like Andrea Markovici and people like that who mm-hmm. totally had it down as a form. And I didn't, you know. I remember I did some first engagements at Rainbow and Star as a room there. And my friends would come back and say, Betty, you have to talk to the audience. I was like, talk? What about? I don't have anything to talk about. I'm just a singer, right? And they were like, no, you talk to the audience. And so then I started taking some risk speaking, and I'm kind of a dopey girl anyway, so it was just kind of, it was hard to learn what to do. And so I still kind of like to think of myself as a concert artist, and that cabaret is basically a place, right? And it's a place where they serve food and have drinks, and it's a more intimate environment, but essentially it's the same work that you do. But I wouldn't say that, I love music, and I love great musicianship and great musicians. And I've always selected beautiful, beautiful musicians and fortunately they've wanted to work with me. And that's basically my focus. So the cabaret thing means, I don't know about that, but I do know about music and good story songs. I sing great story songs, I'll say that.
Can you tell us a little bit what you have planned for your set?
Yeah, it most primarily comes from my last two albums, which is Story Songs mm-hmm. and Hope, which was an album I released a year or so ago. And then I've got some new pieces. I just did three concerts with Jason Robert Brown, the brilliant composer, lyricist, for his
Parade, Bridges of Madison County, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm a huge fan of his. And so Hope is a song that was the title song of my last CD, and he wrote that. And then some other of his songs that I really love that are brilliant stories. And then he invited me to be his guest artist for three concerts in November at Subculture. And he wrote a couple of new pieces, and one specifically for me. So I'll probably do that as well. It's a lovely song called Love Again. And anyway, yeah, it's just this collection of some come from Broadway, but mostly it's just an eclectic mix of really great stories.
What is it that you like about Jason Robert Brown's songwriting and his composing?
His music is really beautiful and soaring and moving, deeply moving. But the lyrics are very vivid, and I can see the pictures, you know. And it's like I see songs as little movies that run before my mind's eye. And that I like that kind, and I like songs that are about a character, and she, as me as the singer, the character starts in one place, poses the situation as a kind of monologue in communication, mm-hmm. connection with the audience, comes to some new realization, and comes out at the other end of it with a fresh point of view, so that you're taking the audience on a kind of journey. And I think Jason Robert Brown writes those kind of songs specifically really brilliantly, as does Stephen Schwartz, who mm-hmm. wrote Wicked and Godspell and, you know, Pippin. And then my other favorite story songwriter, so to speak, or character writer, is Stephen Sondheim. So those guys, and then most recently, Pasek and Paul do a beautiful job mm-hmm. of that as well. So I look for those kind of songs where there's a beginning, middle, and end. It's a specific situation. It's a, you know, I'm an actress, so I like to find characters that I can really play. There's also a great young writer on the scene now, Joe Iconis,
friend of the show. He's been on a couple times.
I love the guy. He's coming. He's actually coming Wednesday night with his wonderful wife Lauren Marcus to play his song "Old Flame" with me that he wrote for me. So I reached him on Facebook. I wrote him a fan letter, and because I found out about him because several friends of mine that I really respect love the guy, mm-hmm. and they were like, "Betty, you've got to know who this guy is. He's amazing because he's so funny and he's really a smart writer." So I started listening to his stuff on YouTube, and then I wrote him and I said, you know, I'd like you to think of me when you're writing and, you know, on your next show or whatever, because I think you're so great. And so he immediately wrote back. It was great. And he invited me to be a part of his Joe Iconis family evening at 54 Below. Yeah. And he said, he sent me some songs, and I was like, you know, because I'm a woman of a certain age at this point. And some of that young angst doesn't apply anymore. So I had to kind of tell him that. And I was embarrassed, you know, because he sent them for me to sing at his concert. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, God, I'm so sorry, Joe, but this just doesn't fit. And he's like, not to worry. I'll write you something. So weeks go by. I don't hear from him. So I write him again. And I'm like, the deadline is upon us. You know, do you need some help with some ideas? No, I'll take care of it. 2 days before the concert, he sends me this like 6-page piece that's like this wonderful character that was so clear and so vivid and really is resonant of something I actually went through in my life. And I was like, oh, are you kidding? This is brilliant. And I had never met the guy, and he could write something like that for me. So, full circle, he invited me to be a part of his most recent concert at the American Songbook at Lincoln mm-hmm. Center as part of the Joe Iconis family, and we did this song, Old Flame. He's a great guy. Love the guy.
And we had him in the night, I think 2 days before, and he performed a bunch of songs in our big performance space.
That's
and
cool.
He's super fun to watch,
oh,
too.
He's yeah. great. And everybody around him, he's got like about a dozen of these young people. Most of them met in college, And they've worked together ever since. And they all act. They're all funny. They all are great storytellers. Most of them play instruments, and they're all great singers. It's an amazing group. So I'm the elder of that group.
My guest is Betty Buckley. She'll be at Cafe Carlisle starting on March 10th. You mentioned your album, Story Songs, and it's got just this great mix of music. And I wanted to play this one track that I've been a little bit obsessed with, your cover of Radiohead.
Oh, thanks.
High and Dry. Let's play a little bit of that.
You're broken off a mirror. You're turning into someone you are not.
Can you tell when a pop song is ripe for interpretation?
Well, I didn't know about that one. I mean, I love Radiohead, but I hadn't focused on that song. And Martha Plimpton, my friend Martha Plimpton, I played her mother a while back in a Woody Allen movie. And she reached out to me to be a part of her benefit concert at 54 Below called A is For, for women's rights. Mm-hmm. And she said, Betty, I want you to sing High and Dry. I was like, what? And I, you know, I kept trying to talk her into another song because, first of all, I didn't want to learn something new right then. I was pretty busy. And she's like, no, you have to sing High and Dry. And I'm like, okay. So I started working with her piano player for the evening by FaceTime. And I was like, I love this song. So that's totally Martha Plimpton's idea. But that guitar player, Oz Noy, who's a mm-hmm. genius, he's going to be playing with me at the Carlisle. And he's been playing with me for a number of years. So
I
love
great.
The guy. And then Tony Marino, who's been my bass player for over 20 years. And the wonderful drummer, Ben Porowski, who's a delicious musical drummer. And he did all the drum parts for the new Hadestown. And he plays in that show, but he took some time off to play with me at the Carlisle. But I went to see Hadestown. I was so excited to see him, you know, because mm-hmm. the drums are really important. He's on stage and everything behind this kind of scrim, this kind of booth kind mm-hmm. of thing. And I'm like, oh, Ben's so great. And then at intermission, I realized it wasn't Ben. He was out for the night. I was like, damn it, Ben, I'm there to support you. You know, it was funny.
It sounds like you collect creative people.
Thank you.
Into your world.
I try.
Why is that important for you as an artist?
I don't know. I just love performers. I love musicians. I love them. Bonnie Milligan, who was recently in that show. I forgot the name of the show. The Broadway show. Oh, dear. Anyway, she's a great, young, brilliant singer, actor, a funny, beautiful singer, wonderful actress. I asked her to be my guest one night at the Carlisle, too, so she's coming. Seth Rudetsky's coming to play a song or two with me. And, you know, Joe Iconis will be there on the second night, on the Wednesday night of next week. I love talented people, and I know how hard it is to commit to your craft and really work at it until you get good at it. It's like a whole deal. Mm-hmm. And so I admire people who take the challenge and go the distance and then become great artists. I love them.
My team is on it. They think head over heels.
Head over heels. Thank you. Yes, head over heels. Thank you. Yeah, Miss Bonnie, she's coming. And I can't wait to see her. She has a glorious, glorious mm-hmm. voice. I contemplated, it was like, should I invite her? Because right. everybody's going to be like, she out-sings you, Buckley. And I'm like, you don't even believe in the world of comparison. Cut it out. You know, it's like, anyway, no, I love her.
You have a good spirit. I feel like I can ask this.
Okay.
Have you seen the movie Cats?
Yes. I was there for opening night. Thankfully, they invited me.
What were your impressions?
Well, I was really delighted to be there. It was great seeing Andrew. It was a very wistful experience. You know, mm-hmm. I really miss Gillian Lynn, who's passed away recently, our original choreographer. I like Andy Blankenbuehler a lot, you know, the choreographer of that. I love Judi Dench, and I love Ian McKellen, and they could read the phone book.
Sure.
As far as I'm concerned, you know, I'd just be having a great time watching them. There were some things about the movie that I really loved. I thought Jennifer Hudson was beautiful and sang her ass off like she always does.
Wasn't for lack of talent.
No, she was awesome.
That film
was
full of talented people.
I thought they could have like taken a little more time with the CGI, you know. that was a little worrisome to me.
But I think they wish they had too.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the world of CGI, I'm sure there's some like massively great artists that could have been called to. And then my dear friend who did the costumes for the movie Split for M. Night Shyamalan, mm-hmm. that you mentioned earlier with James McAvoy, he was the designer of the film. And he's just an incredible guy. So I went up to him at the party, and he's like laughing. He goes, Betty, he's Spanish. He says, Paco Delgado is his name. He's from Spain. And he goes, Betty, I am not a vet.
I'm not a vet.
I was like laughing so hard. I was like, no, Paco, it was great. It was great. And he's like, I am not a vet. He says, every day they come, they want a new cat of some kind. I don't know. I know everything about cats now, but before, no, I am not a vet.
It's the best story I've heard about that movie. Betty Buckley will be at Cafe Carlisle March 10th. Through the 21st. Thank you for making time to come in today.
Thanks so much. It's great to meet you.
This is All of It.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.